inside Microsoft, and I'll explain a little bit what that is. The title doesn't really give away much, actually. And then I want to talk a little bit about existing network packet capture tools. I'm sure some of you use Wireshark, or if you're really old-fashioned, you'll use Ethereal or some other command line packet capture tools. I mean, it's interesting earlier today, my colleagues from Microsoft, every time they stand up and brag about how fast they can make networks go, I sort of put my hands in the hand and go, oh no, you know, all this 10 gigabytes a second is fine, but if you're a network capture tool, that's not very much fun, frankly. First time I ever got a chance to play with it, I actually had Wireshark there, Netmon, I'm going to talk a little about, and Message Analyzer, which is the thing. And the good news was, what I didn't realize that when you design a user interface, the gap between the start capture and the stop capture all of a sudden matters, because you've got to move a mouse that distance, and when it's coming at you at 10 gigaseconds, that's a lot of damn data, frankly. So it's a kind of interesting place to be at the moment. So just so you get some idea about what Interop and Tools does, we're basically open source inside Microsoft. Just give you a feel, so we've got guys that write drivers for Linux. In fact, there was a lot of hoo-ha in the press a year or so ago when it was noticed that KY, one of our developers, was in the top 10 or something, contributors to the Linux source code. That's not really the normal behavior for Microsoft people, if it's, you've been really honest about it. It's not what people expect anyway. I mean, people always assume that we're outright hostile to open source in all its forms. So, you know, when you see us standing here, maybe the reality is a little different. We also have a bunch of guys writing agents. We use the term Nix because it's Linux, the usual distributions, but we have AIX, HPUX. Actually, we inherited that group quite recently. So it's for System Center, they write agents, basically. So it allows System Center to manage these machines in a big network. It was kind of a surprise to me because I inherited like four people and then 400 machines because they have all the different Unixes and flavors, which was like a bit of a shock to the system. We also have a thing called CoAP. Here, let me do a quick survey here. Anyone ever heard of CoAP before? I don't know if anyone's heard of it. Basically, it's packet management on Windows. What we do is we take, if you want to write or compile some open source in Windows, we're gradually working through, but we take the common packages and rebuild them so that they behave nicely in Windows. We just try to make them kind of use the native libraries as best we can, you know. So we take things like SSL libraries, OpenSSL library, and rebuild it to make it work as best it can. It shows that if you want to move source code and port open source stuff and make it run in Windows, it's as easy as possible to do so. Got another bunch of people. We've got some guys that contribute to OpenStack. You know, Hyper-V, our virtualization plug, is part of the OpenStack, and so we do a bunch of work on that. The rest of the work, probably more normally interfaces, and I know a lot of guys from this, is we look after the Microsoft Open Protocol specifications, so we don't write them. The product groups, people like Mr. Tom Talpe over there, does the writing of the protocol documents. But once the product group's written them, we take the protocol documents and check them. And checking takes various forms. Usually it involves sending the documents to a team in China that we have where they write protocol test suites. Independent of the product groups that write Windows, we write protocol test suites to test that the protocol document's accurate. And that's why I was saying, like the FSRVB thing, I'm pretty sure that we've got test suites for most of the protocols. Now, we've used some of them with the SAMA guys before, but if you are implementing new protocols, you should drop us a line, an email or something, because we do have test suites available for some of them. I have to be honest and say some of the test suites are, I would describe, of unknown quality is probably the nicest way I can describe them. But we do have them for quite a lot. And the minute people show interest in them, we will sort of freshen them up. And if you come along to PlugFest or I/O events, we can make them available for you. Yeah, and then the other part of the equation is the network sniffer. For a long time, we have a product called Netmon that you could say consider it to be a competitor, if you want to use the word, to Wireshark. I would like to describe it more as complementary. Long before I joined Microsoft, I was in the network sniffing game. I'll just make the point, I'm about to fire up Message Analyzer, so if you're looking at dodgy websites, now's the time to stop. But if you actually look at it, if you're going to look at on-the-wire behavior, you've really got a choice of things you can do. Here's how I would see the world. Wireshark is really nice tool, no argument. The protocol parsers it's got, though, it's largely telecoms-based parsers if you look at it. You know, if you're in the telecoms sort of protocol space, fantastic tool, lots of parsers for you. One of the downsides to what Wireshark does, though, the parsers are binary, so they're distributed as binaries, and that comes with some risk of viruses and other things being dropped. So we've always, Microsoft, stayed away from that. Netmon, the parsers are distributed in a form called NPL, which is a parser language, essentially a dissector language. And Netmon has a fantastic selection of parsers. In fact, given that I'm the test manager responsible for the new product Message Analyzer and the old one Netmon one kind of gives me grief because the sheer number of parsers is just incredible. It has parsers for pretty much all of the Windows protocols. It has parsers for all the Exchange protocols and pretty much all the Office protocols. So, you know, if you're looking for some insight to the protocol, any protocol in that set, I missed that link as well and a whole bunch of other stuff. When I last did the count, there was the best part of 2,000 network protocol parsers we had. And when we went to implement a new protocol parsing product with a new language, we kind of created a burden because the old parsers aren't compatible with the new ones. And that's a bit of a pain for us. Yeah, and the other thing we do the PlugFest and the interop events in IO Labs, which is to say why we interface a lot with the Samba team and some other folk as well. Just at the moment, just to give you the feel, so we publish over 450 protocols inside. I'm going to use the word Windows. As a caution, I don't know if you noticed this when Microsoft people speak. When we say Windows, we don't mean Microsoft Server, we mean Microsoft Client. But actually, the 450 here is both client and server combined. It's a kind of combined number. The 450, by the way, is just what we call Microsoft proprietary protocols. So either something new we've written, or we've been foolish enough to take a public protocol and modify a couple of bits in it somewhere. Now we have to publish a document. That's why you get these really short protocol documents that literally they're based in RFCs or some other thing. The RFC list is pretty big as well. I mean, if you take Windows as an operating system, there's at least another 1,000 public protocols in there as well as this lot. So it's a pretty big number. And you'll be glad to know we keep producing new protocols, you know. So it's like a complete industry to be in. Yeah, there's just, we have a number of events that we host. The file and print protocols are still the most popular protocols in town. Remote desktop is catching up on you. Everybody wants to make little remote desktop devices. I was in Taiwan recently. It's all the rage, is these literally USB sticks with RDP clients that you can plug into your television. All of a sudden your television's an RDP client, and so you can connect. The latest Server 2012, the RDP capability in there is pretty neat, actually. It does a lot of fancy compression with graphics and things, so you really can use your TV as a pretty effective RDP client. So we, by the way, if people don't know, I assume most of the Samba people know about this anyway, but we have a really big file print and identity plugfest coming up in June on our Redmond campus. And if you haven't signed up to that and are interested, you'd be more than welcome. So let me come to this. Packet capture tools. Do you guys regularly, people working on the Samba team, do you regularly use sniffers, or is it because you have the code you don't? Jeremy's nodding yes. What, Wireshark? Wireshark, yeah. TCP. Sorry? TCP. Yeah, TCP. Yeah. Some people can't be convinced to use a graphical user interface ever. Yeah, okay. I was half teasing, but I get where you're coming. Yeah, so come to the issue we're faced with. We have a lot of challenges in the network capture business. I touched on the thing before. Fast networks are a problem. You know, just the sheer speed is a problem. Along with speed comes the other side of the problem, is just the sheer volume of data you get. So the combination of large amounts of data and the speed it comes at you is problematic, and we've been looking at that. And then the other thing we get, just, you know, it used to be that the place you captured data was off the network adapter, but that world's changing as well. You know, we're seeing Bluetooth, all sorts of USB things. You know, you can't depend on your file transfer will be something across the network. It could be a lot of other places as well. And then we're also seeing increased complexity of problems. If you look at it through the eyes of the people that do the support, you know, things like clustering, you know, large data centers where you have a lot of stuff going on, you now have all of these combined. You have large volumes of data, you have fast networks, you have lots of machines in play, and when things start to go wrong, life is really hard. You know, just even kind of getting to the right point in time is a difficult thing to do. And we're, you know, I can't honestly say we've solved all of these problems, but they're the sort of things that concentrate our mind. And the final one's kind of an interesting one, where the security concern is that, I don't know how much you do this, but when our support people have network captures, just having network captures sitting around on the desktop is itself a bit of a security concern. When you think about it, you know, it's probably got captured data that shows passwords and various other things in its various form. I mean, it's not that long ago. In fact, I had a previous life before I joined Microsoft where I worked for the European Union prosecuting some big company that had a problem. Oh yeah, that would be Microsoft. But the first time I ever went to Redmond, we were sitting in Seattle Airport, and there was three of us all had network sniffing tools there. And because we couldn't get on the network, so immediately we fired up the thing to have a look. And it was kind of interesting. Seattle Airport's, when they basically allowed 250 users, and when the next person came along, that was the 251st, they just bumped off the first person. But surprisingly, some of the big names, IT companies, were still using free text for their passwords for logging onto their corporate networks. And while we sat there in the airport, to go, oh, look, somebody from blah, blah company. Oh, yes. And then somebody came up to us and said, are you guys on the network? I'm having trouble getting on. And we all kind of looked at each other and he said, well, I guess we are on the network. But, you know, it is a bit of a concern. You know, sniffer tools are kind of interesting. When you start looking, you see a lot of things. So, as I say, we have this tool, Netmon. We're the kind of guardians of that. We're trying really hard not to support it, but to be honest, our arm is twisted right up our back. Our support guys use Netmon all over the place, and we're trying to solve a number of problems for them. And Message Analyzer is that tool. I'm going to, you know, up until now, full disclosure, it's not about SMB, but there's some things in Message Analyzer that specifically help with looking at SMB traffic, and that's largely what I want to talk about going forward. But if you look at the things we have in Message Analyzer that we can do, the language we have our parser language is a thing called OPN, pronounced open, which I think is a bad joke, but never mind. But if you look at Wireshark and Netmon, essentially what the parsers did was dissect. They essentially caught the traffic coming off the wire and dissected it into and broke it down so as you could visualize what you'd seen on the wire. The parser language we have does a lot more than that. Now we're kind of modeling, literally building a model of a protocol, and that means we can validate as well. So like when you capture SMB traffic, it doesn't just say, well, here's the frames and here's the fields and here, you know, that's what you've got. It will actually tell you, oh, by the way, that field there, it's got a value, and that's value according to the specification is not allowed. And one of the hard jobs for us is we get to play catch up, because my good man, Mr. Toppy's always got a new document coming out with, you know, every time I say, hey, the parser's found something wrong, he goes, oh, there's a new document. But and we live in this world where we've got to chase the specifications. I mean, in many ways, exactly the same as the Samba team. You know, if you're not there when it's being implemented, you're playing catch up, basically. But so we have the same problem, but our tool allows us to do validation of traffic as well as just dissecting it. So in a sense, the network analysis tool has now become more than that. It's become a sort of judge and jury as well, to some extent. The only problem with doing that is it kind of ups the ante a bit. Because now once the tool starts saying that field shouldn't be blah blah, then you darn well better be right. Because people really hate it if a tool sort of starts pointing things out and it turns out that the tool's wrong. So other things we can do, so just, I'll come to a bit of a demo in a moment. So the way we capture, I mean, traditional network capture tools, and this is what Wireshark uses, WinPCAP or whatever it is, and captures at the NDIS layer. So it essentially captures off the network adapter. We now capture what's called ETW. I don't know if people come across this. ETW is event trace for Windows. Essentially, I could be really cruel and say it's debug done in XML, but that's not that far from the truth. But the nice thing about ETW is that it doesn't just come with values that it's dumping out. It comes with a manifest that says what type and what values you can expect in that debug output, which means our tool can read that manifest and essentially build a parser on the fly. When you do. And then the other advantage of using ETW is we're kind of getting out of the what I would call the driver game. We're literally in the message analysis game. Windows itself has got literally hundreds of so-called ETW providers built in. So you get all sorts of extra information that you might not have seen. And the example I've got a couple of examples just in the SMB space I want to show you. I mean, one of the things Server 2012 introduced was the ability to have an encrypted share. And so when you look at the share, what you see is encrypted traffic. Now, you know, we can understand why people want encryption, but much like high-speed networks and large volume, encryption's a bit of a problem if you're in the debug and analysis game. And what we're really trying to persuade the Windows product groups to do is to put ETW tracing into as many things as possible. Now, the file system guys have been really great and have been really helpful. They put a lot of really nice tracing in, and that means that we can read that data rather than having to read off the network card. And that also means that the encrypted share is a great example. We have an ETW provider that they've put in on the SMB server side, which means we can essentially see the packets unencrypted, even though, of course, they really are encrypted on the wire. We're getting this straight out of the Windows code, essentially. And so we can look and see the see unencrypted traffic. And it also means, of course, that you don't need to be in the decryption game. You know, you don't have to crack open protocols and try and decrypt them. You simply do this debugging at a place where it's possible to see it before it's encrypted. We're working hard on the Kerberos folk at Microsoft to do something similar. That would be next. Kerberos and RPC would be the next two places where we really want to persuade them to give us really, you know, nice debug. The same process that's allowed us to do with SMB is with the SMB Direct, where we've got DMA traffic. DMA traffic, there's not an awful lot to capture on the wire, but again, the event trace for Windows allows us to capture the packets and see these packets. So there's a number of different things we can do. So there's, you know, pretty big advantage. I'm just going to skip out of here now. I just wanted to talk about ETW just for a second. I don't know if people have noticed. So on a Windows box, be that the client or the server, ETW is already there and available. There literally is all sorts of things. If you come into the performance tool, you know, there's this event trace sessions, and literally I can say new data collector set, just do something, and if I say add, and then it goes away and enumerates a very long list, and there you get a list of the so-called event trace providers, and there's all sorts of things. Now this interface is a little bit unfriendly in as much that there's kind of no way of searching it that's convenient, and I'll show you in a minute that our tool at least fixes that problem. So let me come to, first of all, I'm going to dive out of here for a second. And I have, as I say, when I prepared earlier, I have here some SMB traffic that I captured a little earlier. The network here is a little slow, if I don't know if anyone's noticed. I have mixed views about the slowness of the network. I've decided, Jim pointed out, that maybe it's this, but it's so slow that people do something else, like maybe listen. Although when I was going to do a demo on the network, I thought, I better do the capture in advance. So just so you can see what this was, if I literally just, I have a server running here. Let me just show you what I've got here. So I have Hyper-V running on Windows client, and I have a version of Server 2012 running here. And hopefully, with a bit of luck when I go back here, you can see I've got a bunch of shares. And actually, this folder here is actually encrypted. And so if you capture that traffic with Wireshark or for Netmon, for example, this is what you get to see. And you get this, well, at least it tells you what you've got. You've got an encrypted SMB 2.2 packet. So not particularly interesting. So if I dive out of that for the moment and out. I'll come back to exactly how I captured it, but this is essentially the same trace, okay? So basically, when I capture on the server side, and I'll show you in a second how to do that, I get to see all the traffic. So now one of the other things I can do in Message Analyzer, we showed some of the Samba guys this before, was that one of the things Message Analyzer can do for us now is it doesn't just like load up one file for you to look. You can actually load data from multiple sources. So for instance, I think the demo we did originally wasn't we loaded a Samba log and a network capture simultaneously, and you can intermingle them, okay? What I was going to do now, let me just close this for a second. And if I go browse, what I have here, and I go add files, I've got, that's the file that I had open Wireshark, which was the client-side capture. And I have the server-side capture. Obviously, I've copied them both to the same machine now. So if I say view with the analysis grid, that what I'm going to get is I'm actually going to get two captures now, one that was run on the client, and one that was run on the server, and I've intermingled them. Okay. Now, let me just have a quick fiddle on thing. I'm just going to sort by message number. So there's a couple of things I need to just talk about for a moment. One of the things that we do in Message Analyzer that Netmon and Wireshark didn't do, we have the notion of virtual operations. If you've ever spent any time with network captures, you know that, I mean, let's face it, most protocols are kind of client-server-ish. You know, you make a request and you get a response of some form or other. And what we do in Message Analyzer is, if we're in a network that has like request response, we group the request response together in one place. And you see the blue icons on the left-hand side. The blue icons indicate that what you actually got was, and I'm just going to open that one and show you, and that what you see is underneath is actually a request and a response. So there's two packets, and they've been grouped together and put under one place. Now this is what I would describe as a very clean capture. We're just looking at SMB traffic, but a traditional, the trouble with a traditional network capture is you've got dozens of protocols and all sorts of things swimming around. And what this does, of course, is just nicely pull out the two packets that you want, put them together, and make it easy for you to find them. And the reason why I wanted to explain that is you'll see that on the numbering, the numbering's slightly odd. You notice that we have like two 59s and 58s. These transform sessions are the encrypted package. They show up as transform packets in Message Analyzer. It doesn't say straight out encrypted SMB2. And so really what we're seeing here is, if I go just like that example there, 58 and 59 are actually the request and response encrypted. But if I click open that, these two correspond exactly to the packet. So what I've actually done now is I've got my unencrypted intermingled with my encrypted. And so now I can line up from the client the encrypted side and from the server the unencrypted packets. And so now you can see them completely kind of sort of exposed. I was just wanting to see if I can find an example. This column we have here, here we go. I'm in danger of making Mr. Talpi squirm, but you know, we'll probably be arguing about this in a minute. So what I want to show you is, this is the so-called validation field. This is an example where Message Analyzer is not just dissecting the protocol. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to be a little hard on my folk in China. They tend to be terribly literal when they read English sometimes, my China team. Reserved was the name of a field, okay? So they didn't rename it or say the field, blah-de-blah. Blah. They just called it the reserved. I'm always giving them a hard time over this. But once we translate it from Chinglish to English, you realize what they're really saying here, there's a reserve field, okay, in the type SMB create response list v2. It must be set to 0, not hex 23. So it's telling us we've got hex 23 in a field that should be 0, okay? See what I mean?
No, this actually was a bug. This was a field which was designated as reserved, but the server didn't 0.
Yeah.
I believe this was, well, this is
the... Yeah, no, I think what you're about to say, we're back in the exec. This is an exact example, first of validation and two of us playing catch up. We did the parser at a certain time. They've updated the document, and we've not gone back and reworked the parser yet. Yeah, no. Oh, well, we have a fairly long list of protocols we're trying to write parsers for as well. So, but anyway, you kind of get the gist of the thing. So every time I see one of these marks in the column, of course, now I'm interested. As the guy that cares about whether or not the documents are right. I care deeply about this, and of course, then I have to go and hassle people like Tom. Of course, the danger is. Sorry. Makes me happy. They passed it through. Okay, so but it was your document that says what the field should have 0 in it. So it's a kind of nice example there, but it shows you basically what we're doing. So the parsers do a lot more than just simply parse. They don't just dissect. They give you commentary, and we found a number of pretty nice bugs actually on other people's implementations just by this. Particularly when you're new, you know, you're implementing a protocol for first time up. And you're just running it. This is really helpful. It picks up a lot of nuances pretty quickly.
And it shows that if you click on that thing, it picks the document model that has the form of the statement, right?
Well, you're tempting me into a feature that I'm not about to try, because this is what you call a daily build version of Message Analyzer. And when I did exactly that when I was in Taiwan 2 weeks ago, and it went. So I'm not. Yes, I can say things like, "Let me." Okay, I'm in danger of being tempted into something that I probably shouldn't do. What did it do? Nothing. That might be a good thing. What it should do at that point is when it say go to module, it should pull up the parser. And then the header of the parser, actually it lists all the specifications that make up that you've had to read. So let me I'm going to close that for now. Go away. I just want to show you a bit of the capture capabilities. So this, if you're going to start a network capture, just some of the things you might see. So if I scroll down here, which is probably the area of most interest to the folk in this room, you'll see that we have a list of SMB scenarios, basically. So I can capture so-called full PDU. So just to explain why full PDU matters, we have a capture mode that does essentially headers only. We throw the throw the body away. This is part of our attempt to deal with these high-speed networks and high data, so we can do captures that are literally header only and throw. So full PDU is pretty much what it says. That's the full. We can do a client header only, so that is body, no body, and likewise full server or server header only, or various, you know, various. No, we actually do analyze the whole packet. In fact, we do more than that. It's a slightly difficult balancing trick we've got, because essentially when we read in the message, it's not just read it in and dissect it. We're building this model of the protocol. For my taste as a kind of old-time wire sniffer guy, it's a little fussy in the sense that, you know, I'll give you an example, is if it doesn't see the three-way TCP handshake, it complains. And the problem is, it might just simply be because I started the capture and that already happened. And so when you start modeling protocols, it's hard to draw a line to say, well, you know, when do I complain and when do I not? You know, and we have these quite, I'm going to use the word zealous modelers. And they, you know, they seem to think that it's possible to have these perfect captures that, you know, have everything you want to see in it. And, you know, you kind of have to explain to them the world isn't quite that tidy. So yeah, so as you can see, I can do various captures. And what I had actually done, and you see when it pulls it up, you get these providers. I'll just show you a couple of other things we can do. So that capture link layer is the traditional NDIS layer. That's pretty much synonymous with what Wireshark or Netmon would do, just capturing the thing. We have this firewall capture. And basically, that's higher up the Windows stack, so we can if we capture traffic there, we can see a few things that we couldn't see before. One of the interesting things about that firewall capture, and let me just open a this will do. If I start with an analysis grid here and just do it, I literally can go net view, localhost. Okay, and it shows me that I've got, and then if I do a dir localhost slash. So you notice that, of course, I'm doing all this in the loopback adapter. I can talk a little bit of the thing, but so one of the things I can do in this tool that we can do, we can literally group on almost anything you want, but you can see it's pretty easy to group. I can go and see, okay, yep. It's the SMB2 traffic I'm interested in. And there you see a whole bunch of SMB traffic all done on the loopback adapter. It's kind of fun. All of a sudden, you can debug and look at your SMB traffic with that on a disconnected machine, which is has its advantages, actually. Thank you. So that's one of the things, as I say, you could do. We have also, if I go back here and say file, let me close that one. So one of the other ones we have is a web proxy. And so literally, that's for if what you're into is web traffic and you want to capture web traffic. Again, given the network slow, I kind of famously got one I prepared earlier. Line if I. And if you look there, you might recognize the destination and place I was looking at, but. So this literally, and again, if you. I'll just pick one of these as an example. It does this pairing. Again, we've got what we call our virtual operations. There's an HTTP GET and the HTTP response. We also have some sort of fun-like things that if I go in here, I think if I... there we go. You know, is that big enough to be visible there? It's a small image. That's literally off the website, so it renders the images, and there's a kind of rendering capability as well. So it's literally when you're looking at the traffic, if you've got images and other types of payload, it allows you to render it to see it. Well, no. So the web proxy would only do HTTP. That's the whole point of it. But if you wanted, if it was anything else, if it's SMB, so it doesn't decode the payload. If you have an image transmitted by SMB, you wouldn't see it. Although theoretically, there's no reason. It's not very hard for us to do. To be honest, yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah, we just haven't implemented. We have a very big to-do list, and it's probably on the to-do list somewhere. Let me come back to some other things, though. I just wanted to come back to this one. Will do. I just wanted to come back to some of the other things that are kind of interesting we can do. We have this ability, as I say, just literally to group on any field now. So, and one of the other things you can do is you can do multiple groupings, but I mean, for instance, having grouped on SMB, I can also say group by time elapsed, and now it will literally list all the operations. So I have now all my SMB operations, and I have how long each of the operations took. So if what I was interested in performance, I can actually get to, what were the slow operations, I have no idea what this is, but let's see what it says. So it's a close. So I don't know, why does close take long? I'm sure there must be someone in the room that knows. Tom, why does close take a long time? But so the ability to group very quickly like that, and as I say, literally, you can open up, and there was rudimentary capability in Wireshark and Netmon to do this, but in that case, that one's, I want a real packet. Just show you some of the other things we did as well. We actually flipped the stack round from the traditional mode. If you look at Wireshark and things, it tends to show you TCP all the way up, and we've kind of flipped that round because we found that actually if you're looking at SMB traffic, then it's probably first SMB you're interested in, then if not SMB, it's something further down. So we flipped that around, and you can see here, the interesting thing about this is it shows, in this case, that the traffic was captured from ETW. You know, there's no TCP or anything there. Now, we do have the ability, when you can save the traces from here to CAP and PCAP files, but when you load them back into Wireshark, so there's a kind of sort of, we can interoperate with, you know, if you like, with Wireshark and Netmon. But it doesn't always make that much sense. You know, if Wireshark sees a trace that doesn't have Ethernet and things, although it can look at it, it doesn't really decode it that well. But the bit I was going to show, actually, and I didn't finish doing, was literally if I come down here on, just trying to get a real field, for instance, I really can take, I don't know, let's just say the impersonation and add it as a summary column. So I can literally do that, and then I can group on that. So I can get that very quickly. Jeremy.
So when you say the VTW traces, I mean just
fake. That's exactly what we do. Yeah, we do sort of fake. Yeah, so you kind of you fill in the gap sort of thing.
Yeah,
but it. No. You can load them up and see them, but you have to take them with a pinch of salt. They're not quite. Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you capture an ETW, it's not always loopback you see. It depends what you've captured. I mean, you can capture quite legitimately off any network adapter. In fact, you can capture off multiple network adapters simultaneously with ETW. So.
Well,
We don't do all that hard work that you could theoretically do to rebuild it. But the answer to that ETW information is yes, that's there. We know it's the next. In fact, when I if I just an answer to that, if I. If I come in just, well, in this is probably a better one. Under the settings right here, you actually see, I mean, that's showing me the NICs I've got and the inbound and outbound. It's actually quite interesting. One of the things Message Analyzer does is detect duplicate packets. And if you capture off the firewall where you're seeing both inbound and outbound traffic, it complains a lot that you have duplicate traffic, which is quite legitimate, actually, as it turns out. When we first saw it, we thought, that's got to be a bug. What have we done wrong? And then once you pause and think about it, well, actually, you're seeing the same packet going out and coming in, and it is, in fact, a duplicate from that perspective. Let me return to my... so, as I say, I've not shown it, but we can do Bluetooth capture, USB capture. Now, the USB capture isn't as fancy as even by some of the, you can buy quite high-end boxes that allow you to do USB analysis. But Message Analyzer out of the box, you can plug it in and capture USB traffic. So as a sort of low-end, cheapo tool, it will help with debugging. Yeah, there's a little bit of kind of sales pitch on this, but... if you want to play, I mean, by the way, Message Analyzer is free. We don't ship nearly enough copies for anyone in Microsoft want us to be commercial. My apologies at the moment. We're just coming up to beta 3, and it's right now it's on what we call the Connect site. You need to have a live ID to download stuff off there. Once we get to a full release, it'll just be on Microsoft Downloads, and you'll be able to download, and you wouldn't need to mess around with live IDs. But I'm sure you can figure out how to do a live ID for a few moments if you don't care otherwise. you might want one if you're ever setting up Windows even. Yeah, so that's really all I've got to say at the moment. Thanks. Any questions? No, good. No? Beer. Yeah, beer. I'm all for beer. Yeah.